everybody, and welcome to a new episode of EduQuest. In fact, our last episode in the two-digit space, as it's episode 99. Therefore, a very special guest, Matthias Ick, Managing Director of Macmillan Digital Education, and very happy to have you on today, Matthias.
Thanks for having me, Kirsten, and I wasn't aware of that special honor of being the 99, so that is actually an episode that hopefully works very well for you.
It does indeed, so just right before going in the three-digit space, and well, it is also in some other aspect a pivotal, or not really pivotal, but we are definitely going into a little bit a new era with EduQuest, as I'm very happy to share with you all today that we have Macmillan Digital Education as our newest supporter of EduQuest, and yeah, we are very excited to have you supporting us for the months to come, and all the exciting things in online education.
We're extremely happy to partner up with you, and especially what you do on EduQuest. You are not only providing very insightful interviews, but I think it's also a very valuable resource for everybody who's interested in this space, being it investors, being it entrepreneurs, to actually get useful advice from all the industry people that you already had on and will have on in the future. So we see this as a great opportunity to support the overall development of the EdTech community, and also specifically of supporting this very in-depth and very, very valuable content that you produce.
Well, thanks for the kind words. However, I think you yourself are a very interesting person, and I don't have you on only because you are supporting us and we partnered up, but I think you and Macmillan Digital Education are very interesting figures and an interesting sort of business or player in the field of e-learning. So let's start with where do you actually come from, well, professionally? So take us a little bit through the steps in your career, because I imagine one doesn't get up one morning and says, well, I'm now an investor and and like to throw money at startups in education. So tell us a little bit more of what steps led to actually becoming managing director of Macmillan Digital Education.
Yeah, I think one gets up in the morning and says, I want to be active in a very interesting business area and in the entrepreneurial area. And I think that is where I would characterize my background being from. So I'm less coming from the educational side, but more from the entrepreneurial and digital business side. I studied business administration and then went into consulting, joined the Holdspring Publishing Group, actually in doing later stage M&A transactions for them. But always was focused on digital businesses. And I moved on into the Holdspring digital arm, and there we specifically also looked at the strategic digital investments for the Holdspring Publishing Group. So we did later stage VC investments, and I also took on interim management positions at some of the portfolio companies. And doing so, I became more and more operationally involved in those businesses, and at one stage, I actually got very interested in the tutoring space. That was at my short stint at StudiVZ back then, because there we had a social network where we had a lot of university students on the one hand side, and another social network where we had a lot of pupils. So the question is, well, there were strategic services that you could offer that combined those two target groups. And that is how we came up with the idea of having an online service to better organize the private tutoring market, which we then called Tutoria, tutoria.de, which I started, and which we successfully built up over 3 years and quite a couple of financing rounds. And in 2010, Tutoria got acquired by Holdspring. And this was with a good reason in mind, because when you look at the educational business within the Holzbrinck Group, it's mainly resides within Macmillan. So we actually used Tutoria as a hub to build up a new unit that I'm now very proud to lead, which is Macmillan Digital Education, which is a separate business unit from Macmillan Education, where we have all the traditional publishing, educational publishing business. And so we're now looking into adding complementary business fields. These are mainly technology-driven and technology-enabled services rather than really content-heavy things. So to sum it up, I would say what you need to become an active player in that space is curiosity. You need to, I think you need, you do good if you understand more than just the educational side, but also the business side. And I think the beauty for me personally in working in that space is actually those different perspectives and bringing that together. And doing that with something good in mind. And with something good in mind, I mean to make learning more effective and more fun. And there's hardly any other area that I'm aware of where technology can help people to learn more effective and better progress than in the times before.
So what is then better? Let's say founders or a company already, so not only somebody with an idea in mind comes to you. And what is preferable for you? Somebody with a sense for the business, having identified a market and an interest in education, or somebody from an educational background and saying, okay, I want to put myself, throw myself into the water, and I now want to become an entrepreneur. Who would you invest in?
I would invest in the third type of people, and that is people who really understand their users. Who do they target? What do they want to bring to the table? What is the value they are aiming to add? So identifying and clearly knowing who is going to be using my product and what are their pain points and how could I actually create value for them so that I create engagement. This is most important, and this is exactly what you're referring to. It's quite tricky in the education space to really have that understanding. So I would argue for someone who has absolutely no idea about the education space, I would strongly advise to partner up with someone who brings that perspective to the table. On the other hand, when you are looking at I think that there are a lot of teachers who have the potential to really come up with very successful businesses. They, on the other hand, in some cases, should really bring on someone who has the business experience to avoid some, say, let's more easy to avoidable mistakes and really try to form a strong, strong team that can only always become a sustainable business, because that's in the edtech space, I would say, the difficult part. You have a lot of ideas that really add a lot of value. But who are potentially not easy to monetize, and that would then be something for us if we don't feel about an idea that we could bring value to the money beyond money, and that we don't clearly understand who is it targeting on the user side, who's the economic buyer. Then I would step away. So that was a long answer to your question, and I think that that having that clear understanding is not as easy in education as it is in other areas.
Now, I have spoken with quite a few startups and also, occasionally with investors, often in the States. And I sometimes hear confusing statements. We invest in teams, so we invest in the people. We invest in ideas. If you invest in ideas, do you tend to, because you already referred to monetization, clear user base, do you tend to invest in bigger ideas that naturally need a longer time to maybe be profitable, although eventually becoming more profitable compared with a small idea? Not saying necessarily only an app, but something relatively small where it's very clear which problem is being solved, and that, let's say, has a lifespan from like 3 years or so, and then is potentially relatively easy to exit.
I mean, to answer that question, you need to look at the structure that we are coming from. And obviously, we do have a strategic angle on our investments as well. So I would say one beauty of that setup is that we have actually the patience to say we are going for the bigger market, and we are going also for ideas that might take a longer time to build up rather than monetizing quickly, becoming profitable immediately, because there is no need or no chance to find a follow-on funding if that isn't accomplished. So I would say definitely for us it is important to invest into ideas that we believe could become really big, that can also travel. So I would not really be interested in ideas where we think we can only make it work in one particular market, because it's picking up only on that one aspect, but rather at multinational opportunities. That doesn't need to be addressed straight from the start. I think it is the better approach to make it work in one country and then roll out when you clearly understand the mechanics of it. But I think especially in education, there are more ideas that fall into that bracket rather than into those short-term optimization games where you get immediately and quick wins. I think if that's what you are looking for, then this might not be the right space to start your business in. I think it requires some patience. And if you look at a couple of the companies that that acquired a lot of funding, many of them are working on fundamental technologies that just take a while to develop, and then in the long run will hopefully monetize very, very nicely.
From the startup or founder perspective, it is of course then also, if you have a relatively small idea, I think if you cannot fund it yourself or yourselves, that there are obviously also other opportunities, like a very small seed investment or even crowdfunding, I think, rather than going for necessarily an angel or even a VC round. And definitely depends on what makes sense. And now I think here in Europe it's a little bit different compared with the States. When I talk with investors, not only in the education space, they tend to make very blunt statements of saying they would never invest outside of the United States. Usually even I'm specialized on, I don't know, West Coast or even Northern California plus potentially Colorado or on the East Coast. You, on the other hand, don't only make investments in Europe, but had a few now also in Brazil, which leads us to your overall strategy. Are you investing worldwide if the team and the products are right? And of course, where do you see the most potential?
Yeah, first of all, I have to say the U.S. obviously is quite a big market. So cracking that is already a big accomplishment. No, but you are absolutely right. Our approach is really to look at opportunities that fit our strategic pattern, that fit into our so-called ecosystems of companies, and this could be worldwide. And we just recently opened our office in Sao Paulo. Emerging markets, I think, is one of the areas, geographical areas, that will see quite an uptick for ad tech businesses in the years to come, because there are structural reasons in those markets why there will be an uptick. It might take a little bit longer, and it's definitely more difficult to start things there compared to the US or developed countries in Europe, but it could be well worth the effort. So our approach is really, and this brings me back to the user-centric approach, we are currently trying to invest into clusters of businesses that serve the same target users, because that brings us into a position where we develop a better understanding of their user needs, where we try to come up or combine services in a way that we can actually be partners of those target users for a longer lifespan, And currently this is mainly for parents of pupils in the, so to say, K-12 space, and what we call aspirational adults, so adults eager to learn something. We do have currently quite a couple of investments in the tutoring space, and on the adult side in the language learning and also in the skill learning and lifelong learning space. This pretty much leaves out the higher ed bit. This is mainly covered inside Macmillan by Macmillan New Ventures, who are actually mainly focused on the US, because that's also where within Macmillan the majority of our higher education, traditional higher education business resides. So there is quite a good basis to benefit from the mix of those businesses there.
Yeah, I think many of our listeners and viewers will know Macmillan more from the traditional angle as one of the big publishing houses. You mentioned Macmillan, Macmillan New Ventures, Macmillan Digital Education. That sounds exciting on the one hand. What is the role of all of this within Macmillan, and is it sort of set up to find Macmillan's best positioning well for the years to come, as we talk a lot, not only in the higher education space, but we talk a lot about traditional publishers repositioning themselves so that they are ready for, well, all the changes that are about to happen and will happen in the future.
It is a very neat setup to combine the strengths in a good way. What you have to look at is that traditional publishers like Macmillan usually bring quite a lot to the table. I mean, there's not only a legacy, but there's a history of very successful publishing business. That means a very high standard when it comes to editorial processes, when it comes to serving institutional clients and to understanding what teachers and educators actually need and how to best deliver the content to the students. And this is definitely something that will be at the heart of what a publisher does in the future. The question is how the distribution channels actually are going to change. And this, what I would call transformational innovation, is definitely something that could well and best be addressed by those traditional units, because they have the best understanding for those type of requirements there. What we try to do within Macmillan, why are Macmillan New Ventures and Macmillan Digital Education, and we also have digital science on the science side, is to really leverage the strengths that we have to actually make, let's say, new technology-driven and more service-driven businesses grow quicker. So to increase their success probability and to come up with complementary businesses. Optimally, this could then, there could be synergies with, let this be on the sales side when it is something that's selling into institutions. Let it be if there is an overlap, that content that is already existing could be reused in one way. And for us, currently, one of the biggest pluses is obviously the global footprint of Macmillan. We do have offices across the globe. We do have colleagues across the globe that makes it way easier for us to actually internationalize businesses or actually start something new, like in Brazil, where we work closely with the colleagues from Macmillan Brazil, who are originally mainly focusing on the traditional publishing in the education space. So I think the idea is how do you best come up with a structure that on the one hand side enables the more innovative and more, let's say, disruptive games to really go for that consequently, while you don't put at risk all the innovation that needs to be done on the other side, then getting a structure in place where you optimally have a good exchange amongst the businesses. And I think Macmillan's on a good way with the current strategy to address those needs, and obviously all the colleagues in the digital space, so being it Troy from Macmillan New Ventures or Timo from Digital Science, we try to also share our experience.
You already mentioned two very promising verticals in your opinion, which is on the one hand us moving into skill-based societies, not only here, but also in the some of the exciting new markets, although it might naturally take a few more years to really see that in full bloom, maybe. On the other hand, the tutoring services, I think here again, specifically for Brazil, it is probably English language learning. Generally speaking, for the new markets, you invested in both something synchronous with English Up, which goes mm-hmm. more into the live tutoring, although they also have asynchronous, so lesson materials and courses to follow on their site, and then something more video-based, or to say the word MOOC, with Veduca.
Yes.
Generally, is this the most interesting verticals for you, or what else do you see maybe here in Europe as well? So what needed a team to present to you in order to be relevant for the European market and potentially to get investment from you guys?
Just one company I need to add is Easy Aula in Brazil, who is really focusing on the skill-based learning, while Veduca is very well covering more the academic bit of, with adding the subtitles in Portuguese, again picking up on the language bit. No, but I think your point is a very good one. The question is, well, where is the next big thing, and what is it that?
Yeah, we all want to know.
And I would not be crazy enough to say I know what the next big thing is. I think that's something we all have to work on jointly, and then see where the areas come from. No, but to come to point, what we're looking for right now is obviously in those two target user groups, being things that are interesting for aspirational adults or parents of pupils, or pupils as the user group. These would be the stuff that we are most interested in. When it then comes down to specific verticals, I would say there is still lots of room to come up with verticals, especially on the MOOC side. I know you wrote a piece not long time ago about that, where it is about what is the opportunity there. And I agree that finding your niche and following that niche and really delivering the right content in a good way, this is quite interesting. I think if you start from scratch now and you say you really want to go on a technology play, let's say on the adaptive learning side, being it on the feedback loop from how do I actually, from tracking the learning progress on any piece of content presented to make the actual content production better, that is a very, 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 very interesting area, but also a tricky one. I mean, there you are really, you really need to be well prepared. So I would say there are also a couple of low-hanging fruits still also in Europe. Where you just need to define it very, very sharply. Who do you want to address, and then so to say, execute well on it. And for me, the heart of execution is not only understanding the target user, but also understanding how do I attract them. So getting that CPA lifetime value basis straight from the start right. This is what we are looking at. Is that do we see potential for that? And then it's a question of how many users are there. But also, if you don't have an idea, we are also happy to speak to entrepreneurs, because we also, in some cases, start businesses throughout McMillan Digital Education, and for that we also take on teams. So, and I think that is also always a valid option, that you join a team that is either just started, or is about to start, and we are always looking also for talent.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned that I'm writing quite a bit on MOOCs, and I'm definitely about to finish a new article looking at the potential of, on the one hand, I see more European MOOCs popping up. I always ask myself, is it necessary when we have sort of, not to say that they are established, but have some of the big US players, but you referred to niches, and I think, yeah, it's definitely worthwhile thinking about having or exploring the potential of MOOCs in the linguistic space and then more localized ones. So I think that's very interesting. And on the other hand, what you said, what was it? Data-driven and adaptive learning. Now I remember. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think with the adaptive learning space, although it's promising, but over the past 2 years, I haven't seen too much of an evolution. Maybe largely in the math or maybe exam space. Certainly, you have sort of adaptive algorithms when it's then not to present it in way A, but B or C. But it's, however, not what I would call true adaptiveness. And the third thing, the data-driven or big data or metadata, I think, is what we all try to wrap our heads around and try to understand the importance. And, I can say that at EduQuest, we definitely see that as something very, potentially very interesting, and are going to add a new team member. Thanks to your support as well. So, and she is really, she's the data expert. So I think in the months to come, we can all learn or try to learn 1, 2, 3 interesting things about the importance of data for education, schools or educators in particular. So, it should be exciting.
Absolutely. I think at the heart of it is demystifying it. You're absolutely right. There's a very broad range of adaptive things, some of them being more static, others more dynamic. I think what is important is to actually not only collect data and don't make anything out of it, but rather really try to have a clearly defined user value that you want to derive from it. And not everything needs to be rocket science from day one on, and could still be very, very helpful. Mm-hmm. If I look, for example, at Cramler, our flashcard learning service, there is an algorithm running in the background so that you better remember the things. This doesn't need to be as complex as a dynamic engine for, let's say, optimizing what sequence of the video should be re-recorded with what other message. So the complexity level varies, and I would not demotivate people of actually thinking about not only how to collect most data, but really how to apply it then to add user value. And I think there's lots of room to come up with good ideas to really help the users. And I'm really looking forward to see what you're coming up with. The MOOC space is quite interesting, and the localization bit is at the heart of it. I mean, Veduca is doing that for Brazil, with not only overcoming the language gap, but also addressing the specific setup in the education system there. And I think that if one looks into his own country and into his own education system, you will always find specific things that you might think, require a specific solution or need room for a specific solution. And so I agree, there will be more than just one or two big platforms, but it is really about defining the right niche, but making sure that you have the user value.
Yeah, which is, of course, a little bit of the challenge when I look at the latest Coursera numbers. $200,000 in a semester. It's a start. It's better than nothing. But, of course, compared with the $22 million they got in funding, it's a very modest start. And I usually I wouldn't see being an Amazon affiliate member as under the premise of being such a big company or a company with these big ambitions to be something I would necessarily build my business on. But we shall see.
I think it is about testing the different ways of monetization. And as you nicely pointed out, it is a start. And actually seeing with what you can make money. And I think it is wise starting to think about that as early as possible. Switching back to my tutorial experience, that we charge from day zero on, and not started with a free time spent. Whenever you have the chance, test it, because you could always be right or wrong and need to adapt. I agree with you, this can't be the end of the story, or it would be a very sad story, but it is showing that there are ways to make money, and then it's a question of finding the right channels and then really scaling it up.
Yeah, so I think this is a very good point you're touching on. Let's dedicate the last few minutes to giving founders some advice, because once again, I have to refer to my experiences in the States, or with founders and investors in the States, often coming with that statement, if your user base is big enough, eventually you will find your business model, or a certain amount of these people are willing to pay, which I see, at least at the moment, for the vast majority of startups not becoming a reality, at least not to the extent I would wish. So I'm asking myself, is this way of thinking maybe not the best one compared with something which seems to be maybe more European to me, having a clear business model or way to potentially monetize in mind? Maybe not necessarily doing this from day one, or yes, but definitely having something, and you can always rely on and then build a maybe more healthy business from day one.
I think it is extremely helpful to at least have a clear idea in mind of what potential ways to monetize could be out there for your service or whatever you want to want the people to look at. Because if you don't have that in mind and you just focus on, let's say, creating traction, and don't have any clue about it, it might get tricky in the long run. But I don't think it's necessary to charge always from day one on. But what I would advise everybody to do is to test it as early as you can. And you then, if you test it and it sees it works, there could be good reasons to say, I'll do time without charging for it, just to continue to grow. But this will also definitely help you to convince investors like me and avoid questions about that. But there are also models, and the MOOCs are a perfect example, where you can definitely see a very, very big user value added. And the question is, out of all this multiple opportunities to monetize it, what will be the best in the long run? And I think there it is absolutely fair to say you just need to first overcome the hurdle of seeing whether people are actually willing to use it. And I think that is something where you can now say, check the box. There are people actually interested in learning online, consuming this this higher education, high quality content online. Who are also willing to pay for it. And now then the question is, what is the best and optimal monetization channel later on to really scale up on? That is something I would say you don't need to have cut in stone from day one on, but you should have a clear idea on how you actually want to monetize it in the long run.
Okay, last question. I guess you are somewhat open to get approached. I mean, we have a very heavy startup audience, and I get from the pitches I get every week, they are very different depending on the different constellations we talked about at the beginning. Usually technical founders pitch me with more than an idea, what I prefer, so usually come with at least prototype or some very specific questions. From educators, I often get that they have an idea but don't really know how to make this idea a reality, at least not themselves, so then it's more about finding the right partners and so on. If somebody wants to pitch Macmillan Digital Education, with what do I have to approach you? I imagine a PowerPoint deck in today's ecosystem is not enough anymore.
No, I mean, obviously, it's always good to have already something like at least a demo product. That always helps because it shows that you can also execute on it. Is it a prerequisite in all cases? No, because in some cases it's quite a big step to get to that and requires already the first investment beyond just investing the time. So I would argue it in a best case you and looking at the stages we are investing. And it also has seed investments, early stage investments, but we also opportunistic to later stage investments. If, and this is the big if it is really in an area that is interesting for us. So the points that that we talked about throughout the interview, like really showcasing that you have a clear understanding of who you want to serve with what. What it will take you to actually build that product, and also what the rough economics behind that could be, I think that is very good. If you want to take one step further, you would have already have a product or let's say an MVP and some understanding about also the acquisition cost of the customers and the first feeling for the level of lifetime value that you are aiming for, then that is actually best. But as I said before, we are also looking for people who don't have an idea yet or have an idea that it's not worth pursuing, but who are entrepreneurial thinking or who are educators, who are interested in getting into that space, because we always also look for talents for our teams, for existing portfolio companies, and also to staff teams for new things that we have in mind. So, and the best way to do that is just send us a mail at, I think it's info@digitaleducation. You'll find that all on our website.
Or the other way is, of course, to get a good feeling what Matthias personally is interested in. You can check out, and you should do, and follow him on Twitter, for instance. You can tweet at Matthias Bick. So just his name, that's very easy. Like for myself, that's at Kirsten Winkler, or of course at EduQuest. As you all should know. Thank you so much for taking the time and sharing sort of the other perspective from an investor angle. What makes an interesting startup? What are the promising markets or verticals in these markets? And once again, I'm definitely looking forward to working more in the months to come on our shared interest of promoting online or digital education.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kirsten, and good luck for episode number 100. You now need something. There will be a special ice, you more.
Yeah, do you have an idea who should be a special guest for episode 100? Who would you like to see in this prominent episode?
Oh, that puts me on the hot seat now. No, I leave that up to you. I think that is the honor that you deserve well after having done so much work to getting to episode 100. I hope there will be a cake for you.
Thanks.